Support for the Morning Show comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. Support for the Morning Show also comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information is available at carthage.edu/grad. And we welcome you to the Tuesday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I'm certainly grateful to have with me in the studio two faculty colleagues from Carthage College, both from the Political Science Department, Jeff Roberg and Jerry Mast. And you can probably guess why they are here today of all days. Last night, as of course all of you surely know, was the first of, I believe, three debates between the major political party candidates for president, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. And it was a lively night in many, many different ways. And actually, both Professor Roberg and Professor Mast watched the debate on the campus of Carthage, along with about 100 students and probably a smattering of other folks as well, watching it in that sort of community setting. And so they have a lot of different perspectives to share on what ensued, what was surprising, what was not, what the consequences of last night might possibly be for the campaigns of both candidates as we go on from here. And of course, we'll also probably have the opportunity to speak about this hotly contested campaign beyond even the parameters of last night's debate. Professor Roberg, Professor Mast, we welcome both of you back to the Morning Show.
Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good to have you here. You both look a little bleary-eyed, like it was a late night and a taxing night, so I especially appreciate you you being here this morning. Maybe just say a quick word, first of all, about last night's gathering and just sort of what it felt like to be watching the debate in a setting like that. It's not a first for either of you, of course.
We had a gathering last night, which was titled Bring a Date to a Presidential Debate. And I'm happy to say that we had over 100 students that arrived for that. And frankly, the sense of excitement was exhilarating. It's nice to see students engaging in these questions and ideas and wanting to be involved. And
yeah, I would say that there was a palpable sense of attention in the audience in the room. People were focused. I was very gratified by the level of insight and comments that students offered once it was over, and Professor Roberg and Professor Berning took over the kind of a Q&A conversation. So yeah, it was a nice night in that regard.
And I'm just curious, not that I'm trying to have somebody else do my job for me this morning, but I'm curious what kind of questions you posed to the students.
We kept them vague, actually. The two types of questions that we asked was, so first of all, we did a straw poll on who they thought won before we unpacked it a little bit. And then secondly, the types of questions were, you know, who do you think won on style? How do you to discuss their style during the debate, and then the second was having to do with substance. But I want to be very clear, none of the faculty, you know, interjected until the very end. This was all student-driven. What we do at these kind of gatherings is that we'll turn off the talking heads. So once the debate is done, we turn off the TV, and we want to hear what the students are thinking and how they interpret what it is that they saw and what it is that they heard, as opposed to what one of the professionals might think.
Right. I'm going to ask you, and you're certainly free to tell me it's none of your business, but I'm about to ask you the results of the straw poll. But ahead of that, going into the debate, did you have any sense or any way of knowing who was there among those 100 students in terms of avid Trump supporters versus avid Clinton supporters versus people very much on the fence?
So I'll take the second question first, and that is that John Bruning, Professor John Bruning, and I teach a course called Campaigns and Elections. So we're starting with 35 students that we already know. Those students are actually split evenly, a third Republican, a third Democrat, a third quote-unquote independent. So we're starting there. Who came after that? We know that the both the college Democrats and college Republicans advertised the event in addition to what we put out. So my guess would be that the room was pretty even across there.
That would be my guess, just given my observations of students generally in the classes that I teach. That's a fairly even distribution.
Interesting.
As far as the first question then, we did take a straw poll. To be clear, about right after the debate, about half the students left, so we still had about close to 50 in the room.
Oh, okay.
Of those 50 that remained, we still had a number of Republicans, still a number of Democrats, et cetera. When we asked for the straw poll, it was unanimous.
Certainly overwhelming.
I did not see a hand that suggested that Trump was victorious last night.
Interesting.
They all thought Hillary did.
Wow. It's interesting because you think of how seldom on television, in the immediate wake of something like a debate, how seldom you will hear a pundit who is clearly in the camp of someone who, in the minds of most, didn't do very well. You almost never hear them speak that forthrightly, essentially saying, my guy kind of blew it tonight, or my guy kind of fell short tonight. I mean, there's no shame in saying that, and yet maybe there's a danger in saying that for the sake of whoever might be watching, who might take those words very seriously or something. But I mean, I really don't think you hear that kind of honest appraisal often.
I didn't get to do a lot of reading or analysis of the other people's analysis. After the debate and by the time I was able to come here. But one of the things I did read was an article by Frank Luntz, who's a Republican consultant, a campaign consultant, and he does a lot of social surveying and focus group work. And last night he had a focus group of undecided voters from Pennsylvania in the room watching the debate. And his assessment of the focus group's reaction was overwhelmingly that Hillary Clinton did the stronger performance, and so much so that Luntz's kind of closing comment was, "I don't see how he recovers from this," which I think is an exaggeration of the outcome of the debate, but also on the degree to which debates matter, but. I think you're right, generally speaking. You don't see that kind of honest appraisal, but
especially on television
this morning, in the middle.
I mean, get these spin doctors on there, and it's their job to
defend the candidate,
right, and to speak as glowingly as they possibly can, even about a performance that just about everybody agrees was not quite up to par for whatever reason. I'm reminded of the end of some presidential debate, and Roger Mudd was the person in the anchor chair, and when you'd heard from each spin doctor on each side, he basically said something like, "Well, okay, thank you for coming and lying, and we'll let you get back to whatever you're doing." And so anyway, but it's just kind of fun to hear about the honesty that was in that room. Let's hear your two appraisals of how you think the two candidates did, and did you feel like it was, I mean, in a sense, does your appraisal align with the students in terms of being that emphatically one over the other?
Well, if you divide the performances into two categories, one being kind of as a matter of policy discussion, how do the two candidates do on the one hand, and on the other hand, kind of as a matter of political performance, how do they do? I think that with respect to policy discussion, I thought Hillary Clinton's responses were more fleshed out. She provided more detail. The positions that she made and took and explained made more sense. And so I think her performance was stronger as a matter of policy discussion. As a matter of kind of political performance, I thought that Trump started out pretty well. And I think that if you think about his discussion with regards to trade and the economy, he came across pretty well. And I would say he exceeded expectations, right? Many people were thinking he's going to fly off the handle, it'll be wild, and so forth. And going into the debate, I'm sure one of the objectives that his team had put forward for him was to come across as presidential, right? To be the kind of person that viewers of the debate can envision as president. And I thought he started out along that path pretty well, but as the debate went on, I think he began to unravel some. So when the conversation shifted into discussions of race, I thought Secretary Clinton was able to level some of her most effective and biting criticisms of Mr. Trump. I thought the discussion about his taxes was pretty difficult for him and got him a bit flustered. The debate kind of moved in and focused on foreign policy. That was not, I think, a strong suit for him, and he got hung up on arguing some points that, frankly, there's not much support for. And then it ended very poorly for him with respect to the question that Lester Holt posed on a statement that Mr. Trump made about Ms. Clinton with regards to she doesn't look presidential, which I think we all can, you know, agree is a veiled kind of reference to her gender and so forth. And he tried to deflect it into this question of kind of physical fitness and stamina. Ms. Clinton was able to speak to the question of stamina, I thought, in a politically effective manner, and then go back to the kind of the evasion of looks and deliver a fairly biting and damaging comment. Mm-hmm.
I agree with everything my learned colleague here said. I like doing interviews with Jerry because I can always just say that.
Yeah, ditto.
So, I'll have to try something different.
Seriously, though, I do agree with what he said. I think there's a number of aspects here that we can pick up on. I think his overview is dead on, though. So we can break this down, I think, as we do with the students as well, you know, style, substance, policy discussion, and did we learn anything new, right? Ideally, we have debates because not just because we want to see them on the same stage and who we want to be comfortable with or have a beer with over the next 4 years, but also, you know, is there anything that we learned new from these debates? I'm not sure that either side learned anything particularly new that they didn't think already. The Trump supporters already believe that Hillary Clinton is a member of the machine. She's a member of the establishment. And Trump, I think, made that case pretty well in terms of his comments about this, talking about, you know, that, look, the career politicians are the reason for our problems, right? And Hillary Clinton is a career politician, and he tried to reference several times that she, you know, has been there a long time, and I think one of his lines was, she has experience, but it's bad experience. So in that regard, you know, Trump supporters didn't learn anything new, but they got what they wanted. And I think on the other side, I think Hillary Clinton supporters got what they expected from Donald Trump. That is, I agree with Jerry that initially he did a good job, particularly on trade. I thought his answer there was okay, and he pinned her down a bit on NAFTA and TPP, where her answers were not as strong as they certainly could have been, or framed in a way that would have been better for her. On the economy, that was, I think, where he started having problems. When Lester Holt asked the follow-up question of, well, how will you bring jobs back? And that one was clearly avoided.
Tax cuts.
Right. That's right. Tax cuts, and we'll get all this money back. And that one
tariffs.
Was,
tax cuts and tariffs.
Yeah. So, and then we kind of go from there. In the question of who looked presidential as such, which the style question, again, I think we can divide the debate for Mr. Trump into at least two or three segments. Where initially, I think your listeners know, right, that pre-debate, many of the political class were wondering who would show up, right? Which Donald Trump would show up? Is it the calm guy we saw, in Mexico, right, meeting with the president of Mexico,
right.
Or was it the guy who came back and a few hours later gave the fiery speech about immigration and Mexico will build this wall, et cetera. We got both last night. So that, again, as far as the Clinton supporters, they were happy to see the second version come out, because that goes to their argument and how they framed Donald Trump in terms of temperament type issues. There were a number of comments last night that were interesting in terms of if we think about who they were aimed at in terms of trying to get new supporters or at least undecided voters versus just their supporters on their own. And the look presidential and stamina clearly was one that I think Hillary Clinton knew was going to come up. She had, I thought, if it wasn't prepared, it was really a masterful answer right there on the spot. My guess is it was probably prepackaged in terms of and then I think Donald Trump had a number of problems with the way that he voiced some things. I think if he was going for trying to increase his share of the quote-unquote women's vote, he failed on a number of cases where he said some things that certainly lit up women voters and watchers, and with some language that he used. And then finally, I think he ended, like Jerry said, extremely poorly. So much so that even in his last comments, he said, I came here prepared to say something, and I decided not to. And I think he was thinking in his mind that, well, by not saying it and by saying that I'm not going to say it, I'm going to get credit for, being this wonderful, magnificent, magnanimous kind of person.
A person of demonstrating restraint and good judgment.
And it didn't come across that way.
I wouldn't think so. A couple of kind of, and then we'll dig into a couple more specifics about them, about the debate itself. Not that it particularly matters, but I wonder from each of you your opinion about Lester Holt, the moderator. At least a lot of what I read on social media last night was scathing criticism for his relatively passive role in not, in a sense, reining the candidates in and steering things with a firmer hand. Do you think that's an overreaction? I mean, would moderating in a different fashion, would that have been even possible?
Or desirable? Having moderated a few debates, I have to say I have a somewhat more sympathetic take on how Mr. Holt did. The difficulty of trying to rein in the very forceful, one might say even aggressive kind of approach to delivering some of these responses on the part of Mr. Trump in particular would be really, really hard. It's a very difficult thing to do. And so Mr. Trump ran over his time repeatedly, interjected, interrupted his opponent repeatedly. Ms. Clinton, for her part, did run over from time to time. And she did interrupt once or twice. So I guess, should Mr. Holt have been, more forceful? you know, if you watched the primary debates in the spring, you can recall moments where the whole event seemed on the verge of derailing because of some kind of exchange going back and forth between the moderator and Mr. Trump. And so, in some sense, I thought Holt made a judgment that, all right, I'm going to let him have the reins and let him kind of finish this and then try to move the debate forward. And I think that was a defendable kind of strategy on his part.
I agree with that to a certain extent, and that is that while on the one hand one can argue that Lester Holt disappeared after a while, I'm okay with that in this context. Debates are artificial constructs anyways, and the question is what do we expect from a debate? What do we want to see? What do we want to learn? You know, if he had gone the other way and intervened a lot, right, then the headline would have been the moderator got in the way and
made it all about him.
Right. Yeah. I mean, right. So and how many times have we seen that as well?
People don't tune in to watch their moderator.
Right. I think where if there's a criticism to be made, and Jerry's absolutely right about the timing and interruptions, but I firmly believe that the Clinton campaign expected that, and she did from a debate style perspective here, she did exactly what she needed to do, which was let him go, keep quiet,
give
let him
rope.
Go exactly so. You know, again, thinking about who you're trying to attract as voters, you know, the media's characterization has been we've got this alpha male, right? You know, and how is he, you know, and then we've got this sub-narrative of him and women. As far as the Clinton campaign was concerned, I have no doubt that they were fine with him doing exactly what he did in terms of interpretations, interruptions and time and such. I think, though, where there's a question about the moderator, for me, it was the choice of topics. I think certainly Trump voters have got to be feeling that that Holt served up some softballs, or at least some balls that certainly favored Clinton in the scheme of things and on some of the topics, and didn't pursue some others. So emails were just a very short aspect of that, whereas birther issues and race relations and taxes very much more so. And the good thing for us, since we have a couple more debates to go, is a lot was left on the table. So we've got immigration still to go. We've got we'll return to emails guaranteed because right and one can argue, of course, that it's not the moderator's responsibility to bring that up. It's Trump's responsibility, right? And that gets us into debate prep as well, right? That it was his responsibility at a number of times where he could have said things like, you know, hey, there were national security implications about these emails that, you know, you failed the test, et cetera, which he didn't do. And that's on him. When the opening was there, he did not walk through the door as such. So I think in the next two debates, you know, we'll certainly be talking about immigration. We'll talk about emails. We'll talk about abortion. We'll talk about the Supreme Court. Right? There's a number of topics, and of course, you know, in this format of six topic areas, although technically there were more, I think, last night, that there's only so much you can cover. We returned to this same debate format in the last debate, by the way. So the next debate's a town hall, which are quasi-interesting events, probably more so because of the old George H.W. Bush versus Clinton debate where President Bush looked at the watch, right? But then we'll return to this one, and that'll depend again on the moderator and how free-flowing they want to go.
One point about Holt's style and his debate management approach. That's worth pointing out, I think, is that he did forcefully pursue two points with Mr. Trump. There's a lot of discussion about should the moderator be a fact checker, and for the most part, he did not do that, with two, I think, important exceptions. One being Iraq, and Mr. Trump's insistence that he was opposed from the very beginning, despite clear evidence that he wasn't, and Mr. Holt did not want him to get away with that without some kind of acknowledgement of the actual record. The other instance had to do with the birtherism issue, in which, right. in which Lester Holt, I think, very importantly pointed out that in the face of Mr. Trump trying to say, "Look, I'm the one who got him to release his birth certificate, and so I should get credit for this." Everybody's kind of casting him as this kind of this bad guy.
The president should thank me for this.
Right, yeah. Fairly audacious kind of statement. And Mr. Holt said, "I'm sorry, but you pushed this issue long after Mr. Obama released his birth certificate." So to say that the release of the birth certificate was somehow the end of your involvement is a gross mischaracterization of actually what happened. And I thought that those two kind of really egregiously incorrect positions that Mr. Trump took in the debate did not go unchallenged by Mr. Holt, and I thought that's to his credit.
One thing that surprised me, just because I don't remember this from past debates, but maybe I just wasn't paying attention or didn't turn it on in time to hear the introduction, was this whole matter about the members of the audience agreeing to be silent. And I think at two different points, Mr. Holt actually gently admonished them for not living up to the agreement and so on. First of all, is that actually common practice? Do you remember that from past? I didn't remember that. And
yeah, I think it's pretty traditional for the audience not to inject itself into these debates. I thought the spring primary debates, especially on the Republican side, represented a sharp departure from that kind of tradition in which the audience was hooting and hissing and cheering at various points throughout. And from the perspective of people who care about policy and think that policy positions are relevant and important to the trying to make a judgment about who's going to actually do some governing, having the audience participate in that kind of manner is a really unfortunate development. And so my hope, personally as a citizen, is that moving forward, we do try to minimize audience participation in that respect.
Right. So is it I understand that kind of attentive silence, generally speaking, is usually the way it is. Has it been common to say the audience has agreed to be silent, or is it like in light of what happened there, is it becoming necessary to say, by the way, this is not a basketball game?
No, it's quite common, and as Jerry mentioned, he's moderated, I've moderated as well, and we'll say out to the audience, look, because the problem is this, is that it's first of all, it's not a Packers game, right?
Right.
There's kind of some more serious aspects here, and we
not that
the
Packers aren't an important subject.
I didn't say they were losing. I said it's not a Packers game.
Okay, back to our original question. That's how you moderate.
There
a
you
debate.
Go. Very good. Don't let him get away with that.
right.
But the problem with audiences putting themselves into debates is that it eats up time. And so if you want to actually hear what the candidates are thinking, and it can also
break trains of thought.
There you go.
Yeah,
exactly. So.
And when people interrupt, that's right. What happens? Yeah. I was really, taken by one really interesting moment. I wonder if this jumped out at you, was the moment when Hillary Clinton said at one point, I have a feeling that by the end of this evening, I'll be blamed for everything that's ever happened, because that seemed to get at the heart of what this election is about for some people, namely the insider versus the outsider, and what can be plausibly attached to Mrs. Clinton and her long legacy of public service. I thought that was a really interesting moment and crystallized a lot of people's feelings on both sides.
Reflective, I think, of her kind of role as a whipping girl for conservatism. She kind of has this symbolic importance as this kind of liberal in Washington insider. And her own kind of penchant for personal privacy allows for that to kind of go perhaps unchallenged more than it would otherwise. And so I think many Democrats would like to see her open up and be more personal. And that's just not what she seems to want to do. And so it was almost this kind of ironic lament that, once again, I'm going to be blamed for all kinds of things for which, I don't have any kind of control, like not addressing ISIS for all of her adult life.
Yeah. I would say this is another one of those moments, though, that she and her team knew were coming and she planned for. Again, we won't know this for a couple of years, right, until the books are written and such. But I would suggest it is. And that is that we already know the parameters of this campaign, change versus continuity in some form or another. Yes, there'll be some changes even if there's a Hillary Clinton presidency. But, right, she has clearly attached herself to the Obama presidency in terms of some continuity on a number of the big issues. And it's fair to say that the Clintons have a long reputation in D.C., so you already have that kind of continuity. And you also have a long reputation of those who don't like the Clintons. And, you don't just get her, you get him as well, with the baggage that he may bring and also the benefits that he may bring. If there's we're talking about, different aspects of the debate last night. I think she missed a chance last night to really capitalize on her husband's success with the economy in the 90s.
She mentioned it once, but at great length.
There was a lot more she could have done with that, which she didn't. Mm-hmm. And so this blame for everything, I think, was fitting a certain narrative. I think it kind of gets that elephant out in the room and says, okay, you want to have at me. Let me show you how silly this sounds. And then we'll just kind of move on.
So if you were in a position to advise Mr. Trump when it comes to this next debate and the one that follows thereafter, what would your advice to him be?
Should show a little more humility, I think, and acknowledge that the world is a very complicated place, and and try to engage in a little bit of nuance. So just let me give an example from the debate last night that I thought reflected an approach to the subjects on his part that lacked that and kind of fell flat. And it had to do with issues of race relations in the country right now and the tensions that exist between, say, people who are concerned about unequal treatment in the criminal justice system by African Americans, the Black Lives Matter movement, and so forth, on the one hand, and those who are is supportive of law enforcement and feel, that in many respects the African American community has received lots of support in terms of civil rights and whatnot, affirmative action, and the problems kind of reside in those communities themselves, right? And his approach to the subject of race relations was to harp on law and order, law and order, law and order. And this suggests that the problems of that some African American communities are experiencing kind of resides there. It's kind of on them, and so lawful behavior is really the kind of the solution. And that's going to play, I think, in the circles that are already firmly committed to Mr. Trump. And it's not going to reach out to people who kind of feel that he doesn't have a sophisticated enough understanding of the government and society and the government's role in it. And I think he would be well served to try to kind of position himself in a more nuanced, kind of middle of the road kind of way, in a way that he did do during the Republican National Committee with respect to gay and lesbian rights, issues of sexual orientation. I thought that he did a fairly, you know, kind of took a smart line there. And so I guess, you know, that would be kind of my position here, this notion of you know, recognizing complexity, trade, China and Mexico, China and Mexico. Sure, clearly trade has created some problems, but he's been unrelentingly negative about where we're at, right? I mean, he said African Americans are in hell. We lose at everything. We are losing at everything is a line that he pushed. And you know, that's not a sophisticated way of characterizing our problems. Clearly, the country has some real challenges in front of it, but there's also an enormous amount of things that the country does right, and enormous number of things that are more positive about it. And so, recognizing that complexity, I guess, is what I would recommend to Mr. Trump.
I like all that. I'll phrase it a little bit differently, and I would say that he would need to. So I'm going to just speak about the town hall meeting. Again, the formats require different solutions, and we can go to the last, you know, this kind of format again, you know, later if you want. For the town hall meeting, since that's next, I would say that he needs to express empathy. Jerry phrased it as humility. I would say empathy. I would say policy depth to show that he's there in terms of whatever the issues are, that he can, you know, have that conversation, and personal control. And so again, we saw two versions of Trump last night in terms of that and that personal control. Right, is that question again of that presidentialness, you know, ethereal quality. If it is, what I would say is you need to remember that it's not a rally. You're not just speaking to the folks who already support you, right? The point of these debates is not just to rally your own troops to go vote, although it is that.
Right.
It is also to try and flake off a percent, if you can, or two, of those undecided voters that are out there still. Or folks that are weighing, hey, do I, you know, vote for Gary Johnson or Jill Stein, or do I, you know, bite the bullet and
pick one of the major options?
Right. And so he has to really give people a reason to vote for him. And it can't be just because we are under assault and the sky is falling.
Right.
It has to be a more positive message. By the way, I assume you're going to ask us about Hillary. She has to give that message too, right? Which is, what is her vision for the country, and you know, what does she see a Clinton presidency look like? So again, you know, empathy, policy depth, control. There has to be a sense of, so in last night's debate, in the discussion of taxes, there were a number of times where Trump made a turn left where he could have made a turn right. And what I mean by that is, you know, where he interjected when he got kind of wound up, said, well, you know, not paying taxes makes me smart. Right. The implication is the rest of us
are not so much.
not so much. The other implication is that he said, actually, verbally, right, is that your tax dollars are just being wasted. There's no benefit to society for paying taxes, having to do with all of these things. Whether, right, so if you're a Trump conservative, you believe in something like security, right, and law and order and such, and good deals, and we want to win, but we can't do that without tax dollars, right? Let alone at the local levels, right? Here in Wisconsin, there's a lot of discussion about road repairs, right?
How do you pay for that?
Exactly so. Maybe that makes Trump smart that he pays, you know, whatever that rate is. We don't know. there were moments there where he flubbed those answers. So to the town hall meeting, right, where you're in a room, both candidates will get up from their chair and look, you know, across the way, 5 feet away, and say, "I feel your pain," if I can borrow another president's phrase. He needs to be thinking about those things.
I wonder if this town hall format is going to be a problem for him, given the interesting thing you said about how he needs to make sure he doesn't treat this like it's a rally. Because to some extent, it'll probably feel like that, won't it? I mean, not except it won't be completely filled with his supporters, but his supporters who are there will lend it that atmosphere to some extent. Well, so in a sense, maybe he has to resist what might be the natural inclination or temptation to treat it like a rally.
My understanding is that the questions will come from undecided voters.
Ah.
So that's a start. As far as I'm sure his team, after, you know, as they do the unpack from last night, are already thinking about the next one and how to approach. I'm sure we'll see a different Donald Trump, or at least the one that was leaning towards the beginning of the debate last night. Now, that doesn't mean that he can't say bold statements and whatnot. They'll just be reined in a little bit better, I think. There's potential for him at this next debate. It's just a matter of we'll see what the questions are. But frankly, the questions are largely predictable. There's only so many questions out there. The nice thing about the town halls is occasionally you do get, if you're lucky, you get that one question that folks hadn't quite thought about before, and we get to see folks going on stand, how fast they can move on their feet. But usually, if the campaign has done its homework, right, and again, that brings us back to the prep for this first debate, then they should be set either way.
Hmm. Advice for Mrs. Clinton?
I think her team has made the calculation that although she doesn't have a very large lead, she is in the lead, and that moving forward between now and November, she has some strategic advantages. I think that that's right, and I think that on that kind of assumption, they decided to not be taking big risks. I think Jeff made this point a little bit earlier. The Clinton approach was to give Trump some free rein to engage in some excess and undermine his kind of plausibility as a commander in chief and chief of state. So I guess I wouldn't advise they kind of deviate from that approach. I was really what I found to be compelling about what she had to say last night. I guess I would encourage her to return to and emphasize even more, and that is her discussion about the very opening subject of the economy. I thought there was the material there to do very well. She didn't emphasize it. She didn't use up all of her time explaining it. She didn't return to it, but things like developing clean energy, right, and modernizing the grid. Addressing climate change and making college affordable and doing the kinds of things that will not try to claw back jobs from China and Mexico, which I think most people with a serious understanding of the economy are going to concede isn't ever going to happen, regardless of how much tariffs we want to slap onto products. but rather to create new opportunities for people. And I think that's a more complicated response to the question, which makes it kind of politically more challenging to pull off. But I'd focus on doing a better and more effective job at trying to tackle that challenge.
Interesting.
I would start with that, certainly. And I think she did have a good start to that, where she said, I want to invest in you, right, in your future. I thought that was a good way of then framing those issues. I think her task, again, I think she did a good job last night. Her task at the town hall debate, and the format will allow this much better, is to show us who she is. So Jerry already mentioned that she has a penchant for privacy as such.
She tried to use some stories about her father.
Yeah, and she's used those on the stump.
Right, to try to personalize.
And mentioned her granddaughter, was it? Right off the bat?
Right,
I mean,
in
the first paragraph of which
she's... And then those were done, right?
Right.
So in this context of the town hall meeting, show us your personality. She needs to show us who she is. Let us in a little bit beyond that, so we get a sense of you know, her friends all say she's funny, she's outgoing,
engaging,
and, you know, the kind of person you want to hang
on
with.
On a one-on-one kind of level.
This is not the person the country knows.
Even her opponents concede that, right? Republicans on Capitol Hill are fairly universal in their praise of how she relates to them.
And how she worked with them in
on
the
a social and professional level, one-on-one.
Right.
So she needs to be unafraid of being that person.
She could really,
on the stage,
you know, take some advice from her husband on that, right? So I mean, one of the very first town hall debates that we had was Mr. Clinton and George Herbert Walker Bush, and aside from the glancing at his watch that Mr. Bush did that indicated he wished he were somewhere else. Mr. Clinton demonstrated his mastery of that kind of politics by walking away from the podium, walking up the aisle, putting his hand on the shoulder of a questioner and thanking him and addressing the question through some kind of personal anecdote about, I was talking with my barber just the other week about this kind of issue. And it just communicated a sense of ease and comfort with the audience that reinforces a really important objective for all politicians, and that is to establish this sense of identity, that we understand this person to be kind of one of us, and so we can fill in the things that we don't really know by assuming he's kind of like us
and likely cares about me and what I care about.
And cares about us, right? So the sense of empathy. And Ms. Clinton just has really struggled with that over the years. I'm not sure Donald Trump has also kind of performed well in that, where she has not. But neither of them, I think we can clearly say, can approach Bill Clinton in terms of having that facility.
It'll be interesting to see at this town hall meeting if some of those colors come, and if they don't, it may be even more glaringly obvious in that kind of setting where one sort of expects it and wants it, no matter who you are, politically speaking. Well, time is gone, and what a great conversation this has been. I sure appreciate both of you being here. Jeff Roberg and Jerry Mast, both from the Political Science Department at Carthage College. Gentlemen, thank you so much for getting up bright and early to be part of the morning show today. Look forward to having you back at least once more before this momentous election takes place. Thank you so much for today.
Well, thanks, Greg.
Yep.